This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I'm sick with this. I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the fun, lost judgment. My own sweet down to the 24. I don't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated. I don't want to be defeated. I don't want to be defeated.
Oh, hi. I didn't see you there. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, as always, Shane Tolt. Very good to have you on this fine Tuesday and or Wednesday, depending on when the dang file decides to upload. No, I had a little bit of trouble over the last couple weeks. New platform, but everything is coming up at Millhouse on this episode. Great episode, by the way. Patrick Miranda of Movements is here, a newer band, but a band with just about as much hype as anybody right now. They're selling out tours, they're on the main stage at Warped Tour, they're putting out modern classics of records. It really was great having Patrick on, a guy that I met actually on a bit of a different kind of tour. We met last year, both opening up for Good Charlotte, which... to be honest, Silverstein, I don't know if we had a lot of business on that tour, and maybe Movements didn't either, but regardless, it was a lot of fun. And I, for one, wouldn't change a thing. Before we get all up in that, I want to thank you guys for listening to the show. If you like the show, please tell a friend, tell a loved one, write a review on iTunes, go back, listen to old episodes. I got like 130 of them to listen to. Check out our sponsor, rockabilia.com. More about that in a little while. And feel free to get in touch with me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my email. I try to get back to everybody. Add us on Facebook as well. Just type in a search. We're doing all kinds of things on there. We had a great meme Monday this week. So yes, check us out on all those things and feel free to get in touch with me. Also, be sure to check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. I know I talk about it every week. It is what keeps the lights on around here. All I ask is you head over to leadsingersyndrome.com/all access for as little as $6 a month. It gets you in bonus content, bonus episodes, Q&A sessions, merchandise, all this other stuff for as little as $6 a month. leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. What's happening with me, you ask? Well, I had an interesting incident happen to me. I was recording a podcast with a hardcore legend, Dwid of Integrity. And I'm recording the podcast in a hotel room. It's going great. Dwid's awesome. We start talking about some government stuff. We start talking about how they're watching us. Some stuff about the old school Catholic Church. I hear a little pop in my recorder. Recorder turns off. I'm like, what the hell? And a battery exploded in my recorder. Battery acid all over the hotel bed. I haven't had a battery explode on me since the 1980s. So that was weird. But now I have a brand new recorder. Shout out to Zoom, I guess. And hopefully I can finish up with Dwid. I do have like 32 minutes of a podcast, so you will hear it at some point, I'm sure. But I think Dwid is going to call me back and we're going to finish it up. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever had a battery explode? Literally, the last time it happened was in a toy pinball game I had, probably in 1987. The struggle is real, my friends. Never forget. But here I am, week after week, putting this shit out and loving every minute of it. If you need merch, head over to rockabilia.com. They are the best in the business. They have over 500,000 officially licensed items from the band. The bands are getting paid. You're getting the sick swag. They got absolutely everything. So head over to rockabilia.com, use promo code PCJabberjaw, and save 15% off your order today. Anyway, let's jump in to this week's episode of my conversation with Movements frontman, Mr. Patrick Miranda. Save yourself, not worth the time. Yo, man. How's it going?
Dude, it's well, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Dude, awesome.
Nice to hear from you, man. I feel like I haven't talked to you or seen you since Warped Tour.
Yeah, it's been just about a year now.
Yeah, it's crazy. I saw one of those things, posted on fucking Instagram or something, and it was like 30 days till Warped Tour. I'm like, holy shit, that came up fast, man.
It did. It's crazy. I can't believe that there's like, I think it's like we're down to like almost 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
For Warped, which is just insane. It really did come up so fast.
Absolutely. And what are your feelings like knowing in 3 weeks you're going to be back on the grind, back in the bandwagon or bus or whatever you're traveling in? You know, I know you guys did the whole Warped Tour last year, so it's like, here we go again. What are your general feelings?
Dude, I'm honestly really, really excited. I had such a fucking awesome time last year. Like, I wasn't sure if I was gonna dig it or not, and mm-hmm. and I honestly, like, there's just nothing like Warped Tour, you know? Like, it was probably the most fun I've had on a tour, like, period. You know, we made like so many awesome new friends and like just got to hang out every single day. And it's literally like how everybody always described it to me, because everybody was like, oh dude, it's so sick. It's like, you know, it's like summer camp for
punk
like
rock,
band members.
Punk rock summer camp, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Dude, it was so cool, you know, just hanging out with everybody every single day. And like, honestly, like, I love being in a wagon because we tour just in a 15 passenger van like
yeah.
all year. And so like being able to like be in something with like nice bunks and like a shower and a bathroom, it's like, honestly, like it's kind of like luxury to me. Not the Warped Tour is a very luxurious tour, because it's definitely pretty grueling and you know, some days you're definitely like miserable, but you know,
exactly.
Overall, dude, like I'm really, really pumped to do it again. So
that's right. And it's interesting too. I always feel, you know, and my band has done Warped Tour so many times. Mm-hmm. It's always like when you're leading up to it, I have the same feeling as you. Like I get really excited about it. But then when I break it down, I think about the pros and the cons, and like the only pros really are like, well, the shows are pretty sick, I guess, and the hangs are pretty fun, but like everything else is such a pain in the ass. And every time we finish Warped Tour, I'm like, never doing that again. Forget yeah. it. Never again. And then somehow they talk us into it again.
Yeah. Are you guys on the tour this year?
We are doing 8 shows. So we're doing Ohio, both Ohio dates, Detroit, Toronto, Scranton, Buffalo, New York, and Boston.
Okay,
so
cool.
So we'll be hanging, I'm sure. It was cool, you know, last year. I feel like it was a really good vibe and a really good kinship you guys had over on the Full Sail stage, you know, with some other bands like Knocked Loose. And shit, who else was over there? There's a bunch of great, you know, kind of younger bands.
Yeah, Trophy Eyes.
Trophy Eyes, exactly. And this year, you know, you guys have moved up to the Journey's, you know, main stage. Mm-hmm. That's a big jump and a big kind of boost. Is that something you're excited about? Having some anxiety about? What's the feeling there?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a little bit of both, you know,
yeah,
like,
sure.
It's kind of crazy going from, you know, obviously the smallest stage to the biggest yeah. stage you can yeah. play. And it's, yeah, man, there obviously, I mean, I'm so, so pumped because, you know, I don't think any of us really expected that jump right away. You know, like we didn't even really expect to get the offer for Warped again. And when we did get it and when we saw that it was for main stage, we were kind of just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously I'm so stoked because I think that Warped Tour did really, really well for us last year because we were able to engage so many new fans that might not have been able to hear our music otherwise. And I'm sure that that's just going to be multiplied being on a main stage. You know, there's so many people that are constantly walking by and could just have the potential to hear our band and, you know, maybe be into it. Like,
sure.
I'm so stoked for that. But at the same time, I'm super nervous because, you know, being on the Full Sail stage, if you pull, you know, 50 kids in a city, it's going to look decent because it's the Full Sail stage.
Yeah.
You know? If you're on a main stage and you have 50 people in your crowd, it's going to be like, oh, yikes. Like, That's bad.
Well, that's not going to happen to you guys. I mean, you guys have come a long way in a year. I don't know if you realize it or not, but you have definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I want to be optimistic about it, but something about like those, you know, those markets in like the middle of the country where no one really shows up. I'm just like, I'm freaking out a little bit about those.
Right. No, I know what you're saying. Like when you play Jacksonville on a Tuesday or Indianapolis on a Wednesday or something like that. And I don't know. Don't quote me on the schedule. I don't have it memorized, but there always are those slower days. But, hey, you know, you make the best of it the same way that any tour is going to have, you know, a little bit of a lull during the week in a smaller city. Every tour has that.
Yeah, totally.
Unless you guys are headlining, then you're selling out like literally 27 out of 29 shows or something. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Dude,
for a first headliner, that was very, very impressive to see.
I mean, honestly, like it was crazy, actually mind blowing. Like we were so stoked. I still can't believe it. Actually, like it's funny. I have like the tour poster like. Framed, just like hanging in my apartment, just because it's like our first headliner.
Hell yeah,
I was like
dude.
Really, really proud of it.
Sure.
And every time I look at it, I'm just like, I can't fucking believe that we did that. Like, it blows my mind because none of us ever thought that our band was going to be capable of doing something like this. So it's just weird, man. It's so weird, but it's awesome.
It is awesome, and you know. Obviously, that was something that just happened, and before you know that's post Warped Tour, you know, last year, mm-hmm. and everything, and now you have some headlining experience. I feel going into this tour now being a main stage Warped act. Do you feel more like you need to put on sort of like a headline style show rather than when you're on the Full Sail stage? Almost like that's almost like a support slot. And as a frontman, does that put some pressure on you to kind of do more?
You know, that's kind of an interesting question because I don't necessarily think that there's much of a difference between our support like tour sets and our headlining sets other than the fact that it's longer.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like for the most part, like we kind of do the same thing. It is definitely like a little more I guess there is a little bit of pressure on me just because I have to like engage a lot more people. And I think Warped Tour especially, there's like a certain degree of like needing to what's the word that I'm looking for here? I guess put on a little bit more of like that typical frontman vibe.
Yeah,
just
totally.
Because I think that's what those kids like need, you know, like that, like
right.
That world like needs that engagement and like that kind of like, yo, like get off your feet, like you know what I'm saying, like
what the fuck is up, Las Cruces?
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Like, you know, like a little bit more, like I guess just energy overall is probably like the main difference.
Sure.
But ultimately, like I said, I don't think that there's a whole lot that's different in our headlining sets versus our support sets. So.
No, absolutely. That's just, yeah, it's something that I never really thought about either, like, you know, trying to compare the side stages on Warped Tour as like supporting and the main stages as headlining. But in some ways, there is sort of elements of that, I think, that you do see, you know, because people are coming to see those bands on the main stage and now they're coming to see your band. So,
yeah,
congratulations
totally.
on all that.
Thanks,
what happened in Berkeley and Minnesota?
Not a lot of movement fans in those cities. The only two dates that didn't sell out.
That's right.
You know, what's interesting is like is that Berkeley though was like still one of the best shows.
Right.
Of the tour.
Right.
I think the venue itself was maybe like 500 cap, and I think we were just shy of 500. We were at like 4. I don't know. Maybe let's call it 440. I don't know for
right.
sure if that was
yeah
that was
60
or not.
60 tickets is too many to buy the rest. But whenever we're close, we just buy the rest of the tickets.
Oh yeah, just so you can say oh, it's sold out.
That's a thing. I'm sure people are thinking I'm joking listening to this, but that's absolutely a thing. Like because you know the business side of it, you know, is when you're about to sell at a show, typically like you're already into what's called back end or points, meaning like you're already making more money than you're guaranteed. I know, right. I know you know this, Patrick, but I'm explaining to the people. So what actually happens is a lot of times you'll get 85 to 90% of the ticket price back anyways, right? So you can, if there's like 12 tickets left, you can buy them and then get 85% of the ticket price back. And then say you had a sold out show, you know, or whatever. So that's the way to do it if you want to keep those sold out lines straight across your framed poster that's hanging in your office.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely wish that they were all sold out, but you know, it is what it is.
It keeps it a little more human, right? There you go.
Totally.
You don't want to get too high on yourself. Well, I want to go back. I want to go back to the early days of Patrick Miranda before you had any idea you were going to be able to headline tours and sell them out. Because I'm sure you had no idea this was going to happen to you growing up in California. Talk to me about a little bit about what your family structure was like when you were, you know, growing up. Did you have brothers and sisters? How did that work in your household? And how did music kind of affect you?
Yeah, I have three older sisters, one who is like my full sister, and then two that are half sisters. Uh-huh. So my half sisters are quite a lot older than I am. They were already like, you know, doing their own things and having their own families and stuff when I was growing up. So
wow,
it was mostly just me and my sister, like in our childhood, because she's 2 years older than I am.
Right.
She's like my main sibling and she's super musically inclined. My mom, we both get it from my mom. Like my mom's whole side of the family were extremely musical. My mom was like, a singer and like played bass in a rock band in college and
nice.
Was just like a cool, like rock and roll chick. And then like my grandma, my mom's mom was an opera singer back in the day. So I come from a pretty musical family. My mom plays piano and stuff as well. And so like we always like had instruments in our house, like keyboards and pianos. And I started music by playing violin. Like
really?
In like elementary school. Yeah.
It's a tough instrument.
Yeah. No, I was never good at it, but I tried.
Sure.
But the only person in my family who wasn't really musically inclined is my dad. But we were throughout school and stuff. Like I said, I did orchestra in elementary school, and then I started singing in middle school. So I was probably like, I want to say like 10 or 11 when I like started to get an interest in being a singer. So I joined like the middle school choir. And then I just loved that. So I continued with choir through high school.
Oh, wow.
And choir was actually like probably the biggest thing for me as a musician, because one, it taught me how to use my voice the right way. You know, like I have an actual classical singing background. And two,
which is very rare for what you do. Most people do not have that, but yeah, go on.
Yeah. A lot of, you know, most of the bands that I've talked to, I feel like the singers have little to no training at all, which is
absolutely,
I mean, crazy. And some of them are, you know, still really, really good,
totally
singers, which blows my mind. I have that classical music background, and not only that, but my choir teacher was like one of the most influential people in my life, because he's just this amazing dude. His name's Keith Hancock, and he was actually the winner of the Music Educators Grammy. Last Grammy Awards, but the Grammys before that. He won the Music Educators Award, and that's like extremely, extremely prestigious in the world of being a music teacher.
Sure.
But just a super, super cool dude and just a great teacher. Our choir was literally like a second family. Like every single kid in the class was just so close. And it just gave this really strong like teamwork, camaraderie, like aspect, you know, to my life. And yeah, it was awesome, man. That was like really what I think kickstarted my wanting to be a career musician.
Right.
But yeah, so I mean, that was kind of like it growing up. And
so this in high school, you were like, so this was in high school when this all happened. Did you go to a really big high school?
I did. Yeah. There was, just under 1,000 kids in my graduating class.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have schools like that in Canada. Jeez.
Yeah. It was really, really fucking big.
That's crazy. And what were you like in high school? Did you kind of keep to yourself? Were you one of the popular kids? Cause like, you know, I always hear, like, I used to watch the movies, you know, about how there's like the jocks and there's the nerds and there's the, you know, punk kids and the goth kids. And like when I went to high school, it wasn't really like that. Like I played basketball and then I was also like, you know, like I guess one of the punk kids, and we didn't have like these tiers. But I imagine in a high school like that, that absolutely, like, the cliche does ring true.
Oh, it's definitely true. And I was the furthest thing from a popular kid. I had my small group of friends, and we were like the quote unquote emo kids.
Oh, okay.
You know, and
the emos. And, yeah. Right.
Yeah. And honestly, like I got bullied a lot in school. School was like really, really tough for me. Just because, I just wasn't like, you know, the popular kids and the jocks and stuff, like they just would pick on me and my group of friends just because, just because they could.
Yeah.
So it was tough, man. But again, choir was one of those like safe havens for me, where it's like, it didn't matter like who you were or what you were, like everybody in choir is a choir kid. And so like, that was really the only thing that like kept me wanting to like go to school. If it weren't for my choir being such a big part of my life, I probably would have like either dropped out or like done some sort of continuation school somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. But it was different, man. Like I was definitely a different person back then. I think I was a lot more, I was a lot less confident back then, and sure, I was definitely more like closed off and quiet for the most part, unless it was with people that I was really comfortable around. But like, I was terrified of public speaking, you know, like anytime I had to get up in front of people, I would like have the most like overwhelming anxiety, and I'd be shaking and freaking out just because I was so nervous to be in front of people. And so it's interesting to see myself now, like I have no problem talking in front of big crowds or performing in front of big audiences just because it's so normal now.
Right.
So
you you still don't get nervous? Like that first day of Warped Tour when you go up on the main stage, you're not going to feel nerves?
I'll definitely have like some butterflies, but yeah, it'll be nothing compared to like what it used to be. Like if high school me was like, hey, like high school me, you're about to go play in front of, you know, 1,000 some people on main stage Warped Tour, I'd probably throw up. Like now, like when it comes down to it before our set, I'm going to be like, ooh, I have some butterflies in my stomach. But at the same time, our first day of Warped Tour is in Pomona, which is our hometown show.
Oh, yeah.
So I know it's going to be fucking insane.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, that's cool. So how did you, we're talking about choir music and stuff, but you do say, you know, you were like an emo kid. What kind of music were you listening to back then? And I assume that this is kind of what was shaping, you know, the influences for movements.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, so my interest in like this sort of world started when I was in middle school still. I was in like eighth grade when I started listening to like emo music, if that's what you want to call it. I mean, it was a wide variety of things, but like it's funny because like the first bands that like got me into it were and not to gas you up or anything, but like like Silverstein was really big for me when I first heard, like, you know, My Heroine and Smile in Your Sleep. I was like, oh my fucking God, like this is amazing.
Nice.
So like, yeah, like Silverstein was big for me. Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, Under Oath, honestly, like early Bring Me the Horizon, like the really like deathcore heavy stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Gosh, what else? I'm trying to remember. Obviously like more emo bands like My Chem, some Fall Out Boy, like early Fall Out Boy.
How did you hear about all these bands? Was it just like through friends, or was it like
MySpace?
Actually. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. I would go on MySpace Music and I would just like go to each little tab. Cause you know, back in the day it like had, you know, like it divided by genre, so like rock or like punk, and then I forget like the other ones. I think screamo was one of the genres, and it would just give you all the top artists in those respective genres, and I would just go through and like listen to each one, and if I liked it, I would back then like iPods and stuff were super popular, and I would ask for iTunes gift cards every year for Christmas.
Yeah, of course.
So I just had like a stockpile of iTunes gift cards. And then if I found a band that I'd like, I would like go and buy a few songs from them on iTunes and then put it on my iPod. And that's what I would listen to like at school and stuff.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a bunch. I can't remember everybody that I used to listen to now, but that was definitely like my start into like, you know, emo music or whatever, because before then all the music that I listened to was just either what my parents were listening to on the radio or what my sister was listening to. And my sister was super into like show tunes and like really like stupid music. And so I had like the worst music taste until that point.
Well, here we are now.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you get involved with, you know, I know you were pretty young still, you know, when you got involved with movements, and I know it's your first band. So how did you start getting into, okay, I want to meet people, I want to just, you know, form a band and a rock band and start singing? How'd that happen?
So in high school, when I was like 13 or 14, I was like, dang, like I want to play music, you know, like I really want to like do something, but I didn't really have the capability of doing it because I just like, I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't really have like very many friends who were, you know, I guess super into like the same music that I was into. But I actually met our bass player, Austin, because he was a choir kid as well. So I met him like my sophomore year of high school, and he was like also really into like punk and all the bands that I liked and everything. And I was like, dude, like, no way, you like these bands? And he's like, yeah. And so when we were young and stuff, we were like, yeah, let's like try and form a band. And so we had this really, really bad, like, I don't consider it my first band because it was just terrible. But like, we had this like garage band where we would play like shitty pop punk music and like do a cover. And like, it was really dumb. Like, we never did anything with it. But that was like my first experience with like being in a band.
What were you guys called? Like, did you have a great shitty name?
We did, but I don't tell anybody what it was because the music is still online. And I don't want anybody to ever find it because it's so, so bad.
Oh my God.
So we'll leave it at, it was one of those band names where you just name it after like the street that you guys like formed on, you know.
I'm going to hire a private investigator and I'm going to figure this out.
So it's literally just like the name of a street in our area, and it's really dumb. But anyway, so we formed that band, and like Austin's a couple years older than me. So like he obviously graduated, he was doing his own thing, going to college and whatnot. And I was still in high school. So that band kind of stopped. And then when I graduated and I went to college, like I was studying documentary film. I really wanted to be a documentary filmmaker / like photojournalist, awesome. Which I still want to do, you know, eventually. I'd like to go back and get my degree once I'm done being, you know, a touring musician and whatever. But, you know, I was studying.
You're never going to be done, dude. You're never going to be done.
Yeah. I mean,
those sold out tours are going to continue, I'm afraid. Get ready.
Dang, that'll be sick. But yeah, so like I was studying, and I was just kind of like, damn, dude, like I'm not really digging this, you know, like I that's not true. I did like what I was learning, and it was definitely like cool because I did have a passion for it. But I was just like, I felt like I was being called to do something else, you know?
Yeah.
And I knew that like I wasn't going to be completely satisfied unless I was doing something that was related to music, because I was just like so invested in like music being such a big part of my life, you know? And so I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to drop out of school. I'm going to try and start this band. Like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, you know, I'm young and I've got time to fuck it up, and I'm just going to go for it. And so, yeah, I dropped out. I hit up Austin. I was like, hey dude, like, I don't know what you're doing in life, but let's like let's try and actually start a real band. And we did. And here we are.
And here you are, like only a few short years later, which is which is probably the most, I think the most interesting thing, you know, in your career is just how quickly this all seemed to happen. You know, I read that you were signed literally after playing one show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't even fathom how that happens.
Dude, it's crazy. I know. Like, I still like think about it and I'm like, fuck, that's crazy. You know, like the fact that a record label, let alone like a record label that's actually reputable, you know?
Very reputable.
The fact that probably the top,
like the biggest one right now, like, you know,
probably
Fearless Records is killing it.
The fact that any record label was like willing to take a chance on a band that has put out one fucking single, or actually I think at that point we had three singles out, but you know what I mean? You know, like
it's wild.
It's crazy. And the funny thing is too, like, we had actually gotten an email from the A&R at Fearless, and it had just been sitting in our inbox. We were really, really bad about checking our emails back then. And it literally sat in our inbox for like a few weeks before we realized, holy fuck, there's a record label hitting us up.
Bands listening to this, make sure you check in your inboxes, okay?
Yeah, seriously.
Go check it right now.
Seriously, go check. But yeah, so I mean, like we were all kind of just like dumbfounded. Obviously, we all had a good feeling about the band to begin with. You know, we always knew like it had the potential to be something special, but none of us could have ever imagined that it was going to happen as quickly as it did. And for that, like we're just like so thankful.
But how old were you at this point when this happened?
I was 19.
19 years old. It's just crazy that, you know, not only, I mean, is it that you're so young, but, you know, you say you played in like a couple shitty, not serious bands, but, you know, a lot of times what happens with bands that get signed quickly is it's kind of like their second go around. Like they've already had like sort of a career that they've kind of fucked up, you know, because like no one really knows what they're doing. So somebody like they went in and they just, you know, they made a bunch of kind of mistakes and then they were like, okay, clean slate, start a new project with some other people that also kind of fucked up their other bands. And then boom, here we are. And then like it can happen quickly in that case. But you guys never had that. You guys, I mean, maybe some of the other guys were in other bands, but you as the front man, you weren't. You were never in anything else. It's really, really quite crazy.
No, totally. And the other guys were in some other bands, but none of them were ever in like really serious bands. That's the thing, you know, it's like they were in just local bands that would play local shows and, you know, that was kind of it. Like they would record music mostly. It was mostly just hobby bands because none of those bands were ever really seriously being considered by any record labels or really ever had like that much of an opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
So it's weird because we were all kind of thrown into this with almost zero idea what we were doing, you know?
Well, of course not. Yeah.
So yeah, man, it was really, really insane. And it still is really insane to think about.
Well, that's the thing, man. I always feel with the music industry, you know, the more you learn, the less you know.
Right.
And it's like, you know, you're only, how old are you now, Patrick?
I'm 22. I'll be 23 this summer.
So we're talking about only 3 years since you've been, you know, signed. Mm-hmm. And I assume when you got signed, you probably knew nothing about the music industry.
Oh, like
you knew that a record label would sign a band and put out a record, but I mean, like, because I'm just going with my own experience because I was about the same. I was actually a little bit older than you when I got signed, but I didn't really understand like the importance of a booking agent. Like, I didn't really understand that. I didn't know how tours were put together, like how there's a headlining band and then there's support and how the support bands get on those tours and how merchandise works in terms of like all that stuff and contracts and then there's publishing and, you know, and all that stuff. Like, you must still be learning about how that all works.
100%, dude. I'm learning new stuff
because I'm still learning, and I'm 37.
Yeah, dude, I learn new things about how our band works in this world literally all the time. And my thing is too, I'm really, really bad about like remembering how everything works exactly, because it's just there's so many moving parts and like, you know, like so many different people who do different things and different, you know, what's the word? Like, yeah, I don't know. Assets, I guess. But it's just right. Like, there's just so much that goes into being a band and being signed to a label. And I don't know. I honestly try and stay out of like the business side of things as much as possible, because I just end up getting overwhelmed.
It is so overwhelming.
I let Ira, our guitar player, he's like the business guy in the band. He like handles all of like the TM stuff and yeah. You know, like talking with like all the people that we need to talk to, and I'm just kind of like, all right, cool, you guys handle this, I'm gonna design some merch, I'm gonna sing, we're good.
Right. So you take on the artistic role, and I think that that's fine. I mean, in a band, everybody needs, you know, needs their roles, their different roles. And I think that that's great. So you guys have this, you know, you come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I guess you immediately start, you guys quit your day jobs, drop out of school, get in the van. Is that what happened?
I mean, we tried to keep our jobs for as long as possible. Like I was working, at first I was working at Vans, just like doing stockroom stuff at Vans, which was sick. I mean, I actually really, really enjoyed working there. And then the rest of the guys, like, Austin had like a desk job at like some, graphic design firm. Mm-hmm. Ira was working at Trader Joe's. Our drummer Spencer was like a security guard at like a gated community. Okay. So yeah. So like, that's literally like, that was like all of our gigs and stuff. And we would just try and like, cause at first when we started touring, it was pretty short tours just here and there, like 2 weeks, you know, this time and we'd be home for like a couple months, and then we'd go out for another few weeks and then we'd be home for a couple months. So it was just like, we would have to talk to our jobs and be like, hey, can we like go do this, please? and they would either be like, yeah, or they'd be like, I don't know. So I was the first person to quit my job. Well, actually, so Vans was totally cool with me like going on tours and stuff, but I left Vans to do I was working at a photography studio, like that was just better pay and stuff. And the photography studio, they were like, no, you can't leave for that long. Like, we need you here. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to quit then. So yeah. I quit that job. And so that was like big for me, because I was like, oh shit, like I'm really doing this.
You're really doing
like,
this. This is real. This is real.
And then like one by one, we all like started like leaving our jobs and just focusing on the band full time. And now we're at the point where all of us just do this, you know? And
yeah.
Thankfully, like my parents, my mom was really, really supportive throughout all of it. My dad took some convincing. He definitely was like not super into me dropping out of school and leaving a job to do.
That's understandable.
Music.
I mean, you know, especially if he's like, the one that's not as musically inclined. You know, totally. He doesn't have never had the dream like you know, like your mom might have had, you know.
Yeah, totally. And honestly, like my dad and I like had kind of like a rough relationship growing up anyway. So like it was definitely tough for him to understand what I was doing. But they were really, really cool like when we first started out, and they actually helped us finance our first van, which that is rules. Great, because like I was just like, holy shit, like because we bought a van on our first tour, and it lasted the first tour, and then it died on us. And like we were in the middle of Minnesota driving home.
Minnesota gets you again. Those bastards.
Dude, I know. Those fucking bastards, man. It broke down twice. We broke down once, got towed to a repair place, got it fixed, left the next morning, drove for 2 hours, broke down again.
Right.
Still in Minnesota. And then had to get towed again, and it was a whole damn thing. So once that van was like just completely done, my parents were like, all right, we'll help you out with this one. And yeah.
Hey, Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So being from California, Southern California, you must not have dealt with any kind of weather or driving in that when you guys first started touring. And we did Canada together with Good Charlotte, and that was sort of in the spring. But as I recall, we still had some pretty bad weather. That must have been a big adjustment for you guys. You guys must have been pretty terrified.
I was just about to say that tour with Good Charlotte in Canada was our first experience with like super gnarly weather.
Yeah,
like,
in the mountains and stuff.
When we were just about to go like through Thunder Bay, we got snowed in and had to like stay at this motel for a night because there was just no way we could get on the roads. Like we were literally sliding, we would only be going like 10, 15 miles an hour, and the roads were so icy that you would just like slide all the time. It was fucking terrifying. So that was definitely an interesting experience, but we've gotten pretty good at dealing with weather now. I think, you know, we've been doing this for a few years now, and it's definitely, I still think that is number one, like the scariest weather experience we've had. But overall, you know, we tend to be pretty careful, you know, like we don't drive super fast in general. If we see that it's going to be snowy somewhere, like we'll either wait it out or like try and find alternate routes and that sort of thing. But we've definitely been super lucky living in California and not having to deal with weather.
Totally. Well, we worked with producer Cameron Webb, who's from Newport Beach. You know, he did a bunch of our records, and our fourth record, we did one record with him in California, and then we wanted to do our fourth record in Canada. We had a studio here, and it was all done and everything, and we had like a car rented for him and everything, and he called us like, you know, a couple days before he was supposed to fly out, and he's like, I don't think I can do the driving. Like, I've never driven in snow or anything. Like, I'm terrified.
Oh my gosh.
And we're like, oh, you know, you just go slow and it's like not too bad. And wouldn't you know, like the day he landed was one of the worst snowstorms of my entire life.
No way.
I'm like, oh no. And it was, it was pretty gnarly. Like, he was pretty terrified, and we did drive him a couple times, and you know, a kid from Newport Beach that's like, you know, never traveled north, like what do you expect? You know, I take it for granted living where I live. Well, not, I don't know about taking for granted, but you know, it's something I've just dealt with my whole life. So I always wonder when bands are from nice places, you know, how they deal with it.
Yeah, man, it's definitely a trip. I'm actually really happy that I've gotten to experience it though, because I feel like I'm definitely more, more equipped for my life now. You know, if I'm ever in a position where I need to be driving somewhere in like a crazy snowstorm, it's like, okay, it's cool. I can handle this. I've done this in a trailer, in a van with a giant trailer behind it. Like, it's all good.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, you've been very candid talking about your dealing with your own depression and your OCD, you know, diagnosis and stuff that's happened to you. But you know, it's the kind of thing, like, I've toured with you and I've seen you around and stuff. Like, you are definitely able to function and cope with it, at least outwardly. Mm-hmm. But it seems like inwardly you've really struggled with that. How is that going for you now?
It's definitely tough. You know, it's something that I've learned to deal with over the years, and especially after I was like diagnosed with my OCD, like it's tough and it's weird, but like I'm on an antidepressant, anti-anxiety medication that like also is like sort of it like helps with like the OCD stuff, like the OCD symptoms and whatnot. So honestly, like after I got prescribed medication, which was big for me, because for a long time I was kind of against being on any sort of drugs, like to better my mental state because I just felt like I could do it all myself.
Right. And it's kind of a scary thing. You know, you don't like there's side effects and you don't know what's going to happen, you know,
totally.
And then some of them, like once you kind of get on them, it's like if you want to get off them, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand that. Absolutely.
That's exactly what I was worried about is like I've heard so many horror stories of people being like, oh, I went on medicine and it just made me worse and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I was definitely really scared to do it. But at the same time, I was like, if I don't do something about this, like I'm going to lose it, you know, because like at that point, like therapy just wasn't enough. So I got prescribed a medication that actually a new medication that this was actually about a year ago. So on Warped Tour is when I got prescribed, like right before it is when I got prescribed the new one, and it like changed my life. Honestly, and it's crazy because like the guys were actually talking to me about it not too long ago, like a couple weeks ago, and they're like, dude, like you are a completely different person now in like the best way, you know, like before you would just like we would never see you, you'd always be in your bunk, like you'd always just be off by yourself, like, and now you're just like so like social and like you're so much more like a part of the team and like all this stuff, and it's something that I didn't even really notice, like. So it was cool to hear it from them, like people who are around me literally all day, every fucking day, you know, to hear from them that like I have been making an actual like change in my personality was like really, really uplifting because it just gave me that extra like reassurance that like, okay, cool. Like what I'm doing is working. So
sure.
It's definitely, you know, like dealing with these sorts of things isn't easy and especially not like when you have to be in the public eye so much and when I'm constantly having to, you know, go out and talk to people and be social and be sort of like, I guess sort of like a voice for a lot of the kids who look up to us for our music and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it does get overwhelming sometimes. And there have been times where I've just had to be like, hey, I need to like chill, you know, like I can't go do all this right now. I just need to like take some time, regroup, like do my own thing for a little bit, and then I'll be okay.
But I think that that's normal though, and that happens to everybody too. You know,
yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a good thing. Has it affected your like in a positive way? Affected, you know, performing and all that side of things. I mean, it must make a big difference.
Yeah. I think it has. I think that I've become a lot more confident in my performances now. I think when I first started out, I was very worried about what people were going to think of our band and worried about how people were going to judge my performance, especially. And I mean, I'm still my own worst critic, but I think back then I was really, really like overly conscious about what I was doing, everything from how I was singing to what I was saying in between songs to how I looked on stage, like my movements and my like persona on stage, like every little thing I would just obsess over and I would like freak out if it wasn't perfect, you know?
Sure.
But the thing is it could never be perfect. And so I would just like, I would beat myself up so bad over like shitty nights, you know, because shitty nights happen on tour.
They absolutely do.
And like, it was just like, it was really bad. So I think now what I've noticed the most is just like, I'm just a lot more confident, you know, and if people don't like our music, like it doesn't bug me as much as it used to. Like if I have a shitty night and I'm worried that people are going to, you know, like judge me for that, I'm just kind of like, whatever, you know, like it was one night. So, I think overall, like it's been good for me as a musician to be on a medication that's like kind of helping change the way I see the world and the way I see myself, you know?
Yeah. No, it's good. And I think I applaud you for your honesty, you know, and saying,
thanks,
like just coming right out and saying it. Yeah. I'm on this medication and having no qualms and not trying to hide it because, you know, I think it's constantly talked about. You know, if you go on any social media or anything, they're always saying, there's a stigma. There shouldn't be a stigma. You know, let's change the conversation. Like if you're having these issues, you know, like talk about it or, you know, it's okay not to be okay. You know, all these things you hear. And I think it's one thing to just kind of like the tweet And it's another thing to really, like, you know, become a part of the pardon the pun, movement of this, you know? And I think that that's really good for you as a, almost as a spokesperson for mental health issues with young people.
Yeah, definitely.
Or a role model, at least.
Yeah, it's been weird kind of assuming that position, you know? Like, because for so long I didn't even know how to help myself. And
yeah.
I think a lot of times I still don't know how to help myself. So becoming that sort of spokesperson, becoming that advocate for other people has definitely been an interesting transition and not something that I necessarily would have ever expected. But yeah, I don't know. It's cool though, because I know that, you know, the things that I'm doing are helping other people. And I'm just glad that I can use my platform, you know, for something bigger and totally. not just for some selfish, like, oh, I'm famous, you know, like it's never been about that for me. It's always just been about, like, I guess giving other people, like, what music has given me, because for me, like, for the music that I guess connected with me the most and the music that means the most to me is usually the music that's sad or, like, dealing with, like, you know, more depressing aspects of life.
Yeah. Well, me too, man.
It makes you feel less alone, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that's really what my goal was from the beginning with this band, was just to be able to do that for other people.
Right.
So yeah, it's been cool. It's been really cool.
Well, speaking of anxiety and all that side of things, how are you feeling about LP number two?
Oh man, I'm nervous. yeah, I'm definitely nervous.
Yeah, it happens, man. I went through it with Silverstein. We had a lot of success on our first record, and I downplayed it. When people asked me in interviews, I was like, oh no, I'm excited. I'm excited. I was terrified.
Yeah,
and you know, and I talked to Brian from Knocked Loose on Warped Tour last year, and they're terrified of making their second record too.
No, yeah, it's funny. I actually just listened to his episode of this podcast like a few days ago.
Yeah,
I didn't know that he had done one on Warped, and then I was like just going through. I was like, oh man, I actually haven't listened to Lead Singer Syndrome in a while. So I was going through like which episodes I had missed, and I was like, oh shit, Brian did one. So I listened to it.
Yeah,
and it's funny because you mentioned you were like, yeah, you know, there's been so many bands where it's like that LP2 is kind of a make or break. Like if you put out a shitty LP2, like that's it, you're done. Like, and so
sorry to freak you out, but it's pretty much true. No. There's almost
You're so right, man.
Yeah.
Like it's so true. So like, I'm definitely nervous about it. I do think that we're capable as a band of creating something that will surpass what Feel Something did for us, but I think it's going to take a lot of work.
Right. Well, I even read that you pretty much spent, I think you said 14 months writing and recording that record, and that at the end of it, you were like, Jesus Christ, thank God that's over, basically, you know?
No, totally. Yeah. I mean,
and now you got to do it again.
No, I know.
When the stakes are higher.
Writing and recording that record was probably the most emotionally draining and physically, like, honestly, it was just draining in all aspects of my life, like emotionally, spiritually, mentally, physically. Like I was just like, I was fucking drained at the end of that record. It just took so much out of me. And I think it was all for the better. And you know, I think we came out of it with a really, really great piece of art, but damn, dude, like it was tough. Like that record was really, really tough for me. So, I'm definitely nervous about what I'm going to do for LP2, but, you know, like I'm just going to cross that bridge when we get to it. And once we start writing, typically things just sort of come to me, you know, and I'm not going to try and force anything, obviously.
No.
Like if we're feeling like we're not ready to record, like we'll push it back. We want to make sure that our next record is just as strong as it can possibly be. And if that means that it takes like another 2 years before we have any new music out, like so be it, you know?
Okay. You heard it here first, kids. I mean, your songwriting approach, I mean, great songs on that record.
Thank you.
Really, really enjoyed the record. I think a lot of people were kind of turned their heads and were like, wow. Because it was a very impressive record. And one thing you're doing on Warped Tour is you're doing a TEI workshop where you actually, you know, teach songwriting 101. I'm wondering if any bands are going to wander over and try to steal some tips.
Dude, I would love that, honestly. and it's cool because I want it to be sort of like an open discussion, you know, sort of thing. It's not really so much of like, this is what you need to do to write a good song. Like,
sure,
obviously, I'm going to give my tips, I'm going to give my pointers, and I'm going to, you know, talk to, you know, these younger musicians about, you know, having good song structure and good sonic flow to your music. But ultimately, like, I'm going to make sure that they know that there are no rules, you know, like you can do whatever you want as long as you're happy with what you're making. And I would love for some band members to come over and maybe be a part of that conversation and open up to see what their input would be.
Hey man, I'll come over for a TEI workshop one day.
I would love that, man.
Yeah.
Please do.
If I know you're doing it, like you're swapping out your band members. I'll do a guest spot.
That would be awesome.
I did a TEI about songwriting. Was it? Warped Tour we did, but in 2015.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it too, you know, talking about everything from, you know, like you said, song structure all the way to like lyrics and rhyming patterns and all these things that, you know, I think
totally
can help people. So I think that's cool that you're doing it, but that's going to be like every day. That's going to be grueling too. Another thing on the schedule.
It's another thing on the schedule, but at the same time, I'm really excited for it. Like, I've always told myself that I would like to be a teacher someday, like way later in life, once I'm done, you know, like I said, once I'm done with music, once I'm done with whatever else comes after music, like, when I'm just like old and ready to just do nothing with anything, I just want to go like teach.
Sure. You know? Yeah. I mean,
like whether it's teaching like high school music or, you know, I would love to do like a video production class or something for a high school. Like, I just want to be a teacher because, you know, like I said about my teacher, my choir teacher, earlier in the podcast, like he has left such an important impact on my life and
Keith
has been
Hancock.
So helpful to me.
I remembered his name. It took me a second. Keith Hancock.
Awesome fucking guy.
There you go.
He has been such a, like a huge person in my life that like, again, I want to sort of be that for somebody else because it's so important for kids in high school, young kids to have positive role models that they can look up to. Like, especially if like,
they might not have
like a super strong home life or something, or if like if they have problems with their dad, like I had with my dad, like having that strong role model is like so important. And literally like that kept me in school. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, it's so important. And I definitely would love to be a teacher someday for that reason. So I think this will be neat because it'll be my first little experience teaching and kind of being able to talk to kids about what they want to know, you know, from somebody that actually does it.
And I guess the 12-year-old Patrick Miranda that was terrified of public speaking, that's gone.
Yeah, he's long gone.
There you go. That's really good. Dude, thank you so much for doing this. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I have a couple fan questions here. I post it almost for most of the episodes here with the All Access Club, and sometimes I don't get much, but I got a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of people wanted to ask you stuff here, so I'm kind of seeing where to dive in here. Stuff we haven't talked about. I guess I'll give you this one from Brendan Potter. He says, "Alzheimer's runs in my family, and I connected with the song Deadly Dull a lot. Mm-hmm. Was it a hard song for you to write? And what did your family think of it, and how is your grandpa doing?"
That song is really, really important to me, and it was really, really hard to write. Now, it's important that I note here. So that song is actually about my girlfriend's grandparents. And basically,
okay.
The story – no, it's all good. The story behind it is so my girlfriend and I, we were doing like the long distance thing for a while. She's from Florida. Obviously, I'm from California. And the first time that I went to Florida, like not on tour, like obviously like I would see her every time I'd be on tour and stuff. But the first time that I actually was like home from tour and took a vacation to go to Florida and like meet her whole family, like basically the first day that I was there, she was like, "Hey, I'm really sorry, but like, we have to go to the hospice center. Like, my grandma's on her deathbed. And I was just like, fuck. Okay. Yeah. Like, and I was just, but I mean, I was like, I wasn't going to say no. I was like, all right, well, like, yeah, we're doing this. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be like supportive of like this, you know, this moment in your life, because this is really important. So, you know, we went to the hospice center, and her grandmother had struggled with Alzheimer's for a really long time. And so does her grandfather. Her grandfather's still alive. And basically we were there in the room with her. And like, once she had passed, her grandpa didn't really understand, you know, he didn't really get that like she was gone, and that like, that she wasn't going to ever come back. And it's like, it, like when they had to like explain to him that she was, that she had died, like it would, it just ruined him. And he was like crying and like had his head on the wall saying like, no, like, don't say that. Like, don't say that. Like banging on the wall, all this stuff. And it was just like the most heart-wrenching thing. But then literally 30 minutes later, it was like nothing had happened. And he was like, all right, like, so can we go see G-Ma? Like, where is she? Like, he had just completely forgotten everything. And it was like the craziest thing to experience. 'Cause I was just like, holy fuck. And then from that point on, they had to tell him every single day, if not multiple times a day, like Gramps, like, G-Ma's gone, you know, like she's not coming back. We can't go see her. And it, every time it would just like, it would destroy him. Yeah. And it same thing. He would get super sad. And then he would just like end up like, he would go sit on like their back patio for a while and just be by himself. And then he would forget.
Yeah.
And it would be done. It was just the strangest, most intense, thing that I've ever had to see anybody deal with. So obviously I wanted to write a song that did them justice and, you know, told their story, but also, I guess didn't cross any sort of like boundaries of being too personal, you know?
Right. That's the thing you have to consider, right?
Totally.
When you're writing a song, and it's obviously, if it's something that you're going to, I mean, you can write something and not say what it's about, but once you say what it's about, you have to almost, you know, there could be an issue there. Perhaps someone could have an issue with it, putting that kind of stuff on public display, right? So,
yeah. Now, thankfully, I mean, Alexis, my girlfriend, her whole family was extremely supportive of me writing the song, and they all love the song, and they all think that it just is the perfect descriptor of what that situation was like. So it was really cool, and they're all super supportive of me and all of this. But man, it was tough to write that song because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to do it right. So
Okay, let's go on to the next little fan question here. Eric Layton asks, he often talks about the decision to scream less on this recent album. He says, because it hurts and I don't like doing it.
Yep.
But didn't you... fuck screaming. But didn't he work with Melissa Cross to learn to do it correctly? And even if it didn't hurt, would he still not want to do it anymore just as a purely musical decision?
I did learn how to do it correctly, yes. Melissa Cross has helped me immensely. She is heaven sent. That woman is literally a savior. She is the best. But I think when I was saying like, oh, it hurts and I don't like it, is like, it's it doesn't necessarily hurt my throat, but it's like you're putting so much of your body into doing this fucking thing that it's like, it just becomes like exhausting to the point where like your stomach is aching and like, you know, like I just don't like it. just because like, I don't know. It was something that I really loved to do back in the day. And now I've just gotten to the point where I'm like, I'm a singer, you know, I want to showcase my voice, my classical training that I have, because I know Keith Hancock is just hearing me scream and destroy my vocal cords. Well, not anymore. I'm not destroying them anymore. But, you know, I know he's hearing that and just being like, wow, everything I taught this kid is just going down the drain, huh?
There you go.
So I don't know. I wanted to showcase my singing because it's the thing that I'm most proud of about myself. And I think that moving forward, Not that I think that being super successful is like the end all be all for this band, but obviously we want longevity. And I think in order to be able to appeal to more people, screaming needs to be a little less prevalent. Just because if you're going to get, you know, any sort of radio play or that sort of thing, like typically you won't get approved if you have screaming or that sort of thing. Again, not that it's about that sort of thing, but we would love to be able to like have some sort of radio play, just to be able to say like, damn, my band's on the fucking radio.
That's how you get the approval from the parents. The second the song's on the radio, that's what you need.
Totally.
That's
it. 100%.
That's when it's real.
Yeah. So also I think that I, as a person, have just kind of mellowed out a lot more.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm as angsty as I was. And you know, I don't feel the need to scream anymore just because, I don't know. I like singing. It's my thing.
Yeah. That's fantastic. All right. Well, dude, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, dude, thank you so much for having me. Seriously, I really appreciate you asking me to come on.
Of course, man. And I always play music at the end of the show. I'd love to play maybe one of your favorite movement songs.
My favorite.
Do you have
song?
One? Maybe it's one you want all the people to hear that maybe haven't, you know, checked out your band. Maybe it's a deep cut that you're proud of that doesn't get a lot of attention. Could be anything.
I think, honestly, like, my favorite song to play live is a song called Suffer Through.
Okay.
And I think that's like probably my favorite song on our record right now. Obviously, my favorite kind of like, it sort of fluctuates depending on like my mood or like, you know, whatever. But yeah, let's go ahead and play that one.
Let's rip it. All right. Here's Suffer Through by Movements on Lead Singer Syndrome.
Yeah.
So there is Patrick. What a nice guy. Just what a genuine dude. So honest about his own afflictions and problems. And I really love that. I feel like sometimes the younger generation are a little scared to open up. And the fact that he's just putting it all out there is really, really, really awesome. Make sure you go see Movements on the Warped Tour. They're on the entire thing. I will be there. Maybe he'll take me up on this songwriting class. I think he was just, you know, yanking my chain a little bit. But I'd love to sit in and hear what he has to say. Great songwriting on that Movements full length. And there's another one going to be coming. So get ready for that as well. Next week, we will be back with another episode. I can't tell you who it is, but stay tuned. Again, the struggle is real. Shout out to my sinners worldwide, all the members of the All Access Club. You know who you are, and I know who you are. Thanks for the love. Thanks for the support. Anyone want in? You want to join up? LeadSingerSyndrome.com/All Access. Check it out. Another tune, you say? You want to hear more Movements? I think I do, too. Why not? Let's bust it out. Here is Daylily on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next time.
Outside for the first time in a long time. Lose yourself, sink into the sunlight. It's been a while since you felt right. But the warm nights are coming soon and you'll be just fine. You'll be just fine.